Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lightspeed. Hello, and welcome to the Lightspeed Magazine Story Podcast. I am your host, Jim Freund. Lightspeed Magazine is edited by John Joseph Adams, and our podcast is produced by Skyboat Media. Today's story is The New Provisions by Adam Troy Castro and read by Stefan Rudnicki. This story is copyright 2014 by Adam Troy Castro. Adam Troy Castro is best known in science fiction circles for his Philip K. Dick award-winning novel, Emissaries from the Dead, which stars his profoundly damaged far future murder investigator, Andrea Court. His short fiction has been nominated for 8 Nebulas, 3 Stoker Awards, and 2 Hugos. The first volume of the middle grade fantasy series, Gustav Gloom and the People Taker, was published by Grosset and Dunlap in August 2012. The second and third volumes, Gustav Gloom and the Nightmare Vault and Gustav Gloom and the Four Terrors, came out in 2013. Adam lives in Florida with his wife Judy and a rotating collection of insane cats that includes Uma Furman, Meow Pharaoh, and Harley Quinn. And now, buckle up. We're going to Lightspeed.
The New Provisions by Adam Troy Castro. The first new provision. Phil called the toll-free number he'd been given, and after the usual 20-minute hold time, reached a human being who explained that the tow truck driver really did have the right to haul away his car. It didn't matter that the car had been parked in his driveway or that it had been completely paid for, and it certainly didn't matter that it was the only form of transportation he and his wife had for getting back and forth from work. What mattered is that a new provision had been added to the wording of the contract Phil had signed for a home improvement loan 7 years earlier. Phil had found the company a nightmare to deal with, and on paying off the last installment more than 5 years ago, had gone on the website and made his displeasure known. Phil no longer had an active contract with that company and had not thought of them since severing ties. But the company had gone back over its list of old customers and retroactively inserted a clause allowing them to seize the assets of any customer who publicly defamed their services in any manner. Phil was allowed to appeal, but only with the company's in-house arbitrator, and it would likely be a waste of time as the case was so open and shut. Outraged, Phil demanded to speak with somebody higher up. The representative assured him that this was his option, but added that Phil would need to provide a credit card to qualify for this premium service at the rate of $3.75 per minute, 30 minutes minimum. The second new provision. Phil's friend, the lawyer, who seemed to be packing up his office, advised him that there were no grounds for a suit. The nation's corporations had spent hundreds of billions of dollars over the last 10 years fighting all the way to the Supreme Court for the right to alter contracts in any way that benefited them and had, in the end, gotten all the concessions they wanted. The chief limitation of this new power was, of course, that it could only be exercised against individual consumers of below a particular income, as the alternative would be an out-of-control orgy of giant corporations rewriting past agreements with other giant corporations in asset seizures, and that would lead to anarchy. No one would ever be able to get any business done. But Phil and his wife fell below the cutoff point and were therefore vulnerable to any punitive fee considered appropriate by anybody they'd ever done business with at any point in their lives. "I wouldn't take this any further than you already have," the lawyer said, rechecking his airline tickets for the third time in the course of the conversation. "You've already violated the new clause requiring you to use the company's in-house arbitrator." "But my car," Phil said. "How am I going to get to work without my car?" "I sympathize," the lawyer said, "but in the eyes of the law, you really should have thought of this before. Now please leave before I get penalized for talking to you." The third new provision. Phil's new commute to work involved two buses and a seven-block walk. He missed a vital transfer, and as a result walked in 40 minutes late, his coat dripping from the torrential downpour that had decided to add to his troubles just before he reached the overhang of the firm's front entrance. When he reached his desk, there was a yellow sticky note on his monitor advising him of a meeting in the Human Resources Department. He trudged down the hall in a fog of increasing dread and found the HR director and his immediate superior waiting for him with the news that the company had just added a new clause to his employment contract. His salary was being cut by one-third, retroactive to his first day at work 13 years ago, which meant that he would be responsible for paying back every additional cent he had earned in the interim. They knew that he did not have the savings in cash and wanted it known that the company was putting a lien on his house to resolve the debt. The fourth new provision. Phil was late for work again, and his bosses let him know that they understood the difficulty he was having with his new commute. However, they also wanted him to know that they could not abide lateness. The new provisions permitted them to levy tremendous fines for every offense, which could, in theory, exceed anything he actually earned. However, they had a solution. The company was having this same difficulty with many of their recently vehicle-deprived employees and was responding by turning the third floor into a dormitory to house them during the week. He and a group of the others were taken on a tour. The dormitory was one large room under overhead fluorescence, which would soon be lined with bunk beds and storage lockers. A nominal fee for the accommodations and another for food would be deducted from paychecks at the end of every week. Phil said that he didn't want to live at his office. The boss said, "I can understand that, but you now owe money to the company and will have to abide by the terms of the contract you authorized by taking on this debt." He went on to say that there would be significant penalties for noncompliance. The fifth new provision. Phil received permission to return home for some belongings and found the front locks changed and his wife gone. The house was now occupied by a uniformed guard who had stuffed all of Phil's clothing into big black garbage bags and would not allow him past the front room, which was now lined with rusty 50-gallon drums. The guard informed Phil that additional fines levied by the finance company, in accordance with several supplemental provisions enacted just yesterday, amounted to several times the value of his home, and that their attempt to seize it under the terms now specified in the contract had proved in conflict with the retroactive provisions of several other contracts Phil had entered into with other parties, including the power company, the internet provider, and his own place of employment. The ownership was now being adjudicated. Phil had also been charged with several counts of tortious interference and would no doubt be arrested shortly. Phil's wife had already been taken away by the private police force of her first employer, a fast food chain she'd worked for a couple of months during the summer she turned 18. No, the guard didn't know what the charges were, but the Supreme Court had ruled that corporate police forces did not have to provide specific charges at the time of arrest, as long as a retroactive provision justifying them could be provided within 48 hours. The guard did know that this residence was a chemical storage facility, and that if Phil did not leave the premises at once, he would be charged with trespassing. The sixth new provision. One of Phil's co-workers, a man who still owed the company many thousands of dollars, was caught fleeing for the border. The company police dragged him back and issued a brand new contractual provision that attempts to escape were grounds for transferring all prior agreements to a new employer. When the co-worker found out what he would now be doing for a living, his screams were audible through the entire building. Hours after they dragged him away, one of the middle managers made a visit to the dormitory and explained that everybody there was in violation of an even newer addendum that prohibited any employee from leaving or quitting or taking time off unless they were issued specific permission by a majority vote of the board of directors. Because some people insisted on flouting this rule and thus ruining the honor system, the company was now forced to institute some stringent security procedures. Everybody would be fitted with a bracelet that would track their every movement. The manufacturing cost of this bracelet would be added to their debt. The costs of monitoring them, like the cost of housing them and the cost of feeding them, would be added to the amount deducted from their paychecks. Workers already in deficit, like Phil, would be subject to further penalties. The cries of outrage and dismay did not move the middle manager, who reminded everybody that it was after lights out and that they would have to get up early in the morning for their fitting. The seventh new provision. The two companies with the greatest claim on Phil's passive debt settled their conflicting interests by requiring him to work 8 hours for one before being driven across town to work 8 hours at the other. It took them 4 days to decide which would now have the responsibility of feeding him, and therefore during that time neither did. He started fading out in the middle of conversations, negatively affecting his productivity to the point where they created a retroactive provision allowing them to fit him with a shock collar. Any time he was inactive for more than 2 minutes, he got jolted. The cost of the collar and, of course, the cost of the electricity were both added to his debt at only a 200% markup. He threw a punch at one of his supervisors and was punished by being locked in the company hotbox up on the roof. Afterward, he was beaten severely and told that he would now be prosecuted for assault. The eighth new provision. Phil's holding cell was nowhere near any municipal or state or federal courthouse. His employer had created a judicial division that operated on company property and operated under corporate rules, with one of those rules respecting the provision that no employee was permitted to testify against the employer in any venue, including this one. The dispute was naturally settled in the company's favor without Phil uttering so much as a single word. The resulting penalties and liens against Phil brought his debts up to the level where it was decided no amount of labor on his part could ever possibly resolve them. Besides, he had already proven himself a troublemaker and rabble-rouser and a bad influence on everybody else. It would certainly cost far more to retain him as an employee than he would ever be able to earn back with services rendered. After long and sometimes contentious negotiation, Phil's employers and the various shareholders in Phil elected to cut their losses and transfer his contracts to an overseas broker willing to pay 10 cents on the dollar. The last provision. Phil and a large number of other scofflaws were driven out to the coast and loaded into a cargo ship headed for ports unknown. He was able to spare one last look at the city where he had lived all his life before the sticks wielded by his new employers prodded him across the bloody deck and down the ramp into the darkness of the cargo hold, where, in the seconds before he was chained to his bunk, he was just barely able to make out the forms of dozens of others, coughing and moaning and struggling in vain against their bonds as they began their journey toward a place that many would never live to see. He thought, but could not be certain, that he heard a gasp and his wife calling out his name. He thought, but could not be certain, that this was as far as he would sink, the worst of the indignities he would be required to suffer. The one thing he did not do was scream, much as every ounce of him wanted to, because he had learned everything he had ever needed to know about the penalties that went along with defaming those who had always owned him, and because there was no telling what further provisions his newest employers would write into his contract next.
Welcome back. You just heard The New Provisions by Adam Troy Castro, narrated by Stefan Rudnicki. We hope you enjoyed it. If so, please go to our website at lightspeedmagazine.com. Just click on fiction, find this story, and leave a comment there. And if you'd like to spread the word, go to iTunes, find the Lightspeed Magazine Story Podcast, and leave a review or rating there. Lightspeed Magazine is edited by John Joseph Adams. If you are not already a subscriber, check out our many options at lightspeedmagazine.com/subscribe. Skyboat Media, the most respected independent audio production team on the West Coast, produces the stories for this podcast. They are headed by the Audie and Grammy Award-winning narrator Stefan Rudnicki and Gabrielle DeCure. Check out their website at skyboatmedia.com. Music and sound logos are composed and performed by Jack Kincaid. Post-production for Lightspeed is in association with yours truly. Our audiobook story collection, Lightspeed Year One, is available from audible.com and includes all of the podcasts from Lightspeed's first year, which was nominated for the Hugo Award. The collection is also available on downpour.com. Just search for Lightspeed and you're on your way. Once again, this month's issue of Lightspeed Magazine is sponsored by Edge Science Fiction and Fantasy Publishing. They can be found online at edgewebsite.com. This podcast is copyright 2014 by Lightspeed Magazine. Thanks for listening. That's all for now. See you on the Bitstream. I'm Jim Freund, wishing you cheers from all of us at
Lightspeed.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.